Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Mary Coughlin, you're very welcome. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? It's a good afternoon now. Good afternoon. I'm great. I'm mighty.
Yeah, morning for you kind of people, I suppose.
No, stop it. I've been up since six.
So you're having a flurry of activity at the moment, which we will come back to. But we asked you to pick five pieces of music that you associate with kind of big moments in your life, I suppose. So let's get straight down to those, right? First up was a hit for Bridie Gallagher in 1958. So you were barely born. Why did you pick Two Little Orphans?
Because my father was a big... Daddy's from Donegal. My name is Doherty, you know that. Mary Doherty. I'm married to Coughlin. But Daddy was a big fan of Bridie Gallagher and Two Little Orphans. I still remember the record and the little green and white label. And it was never off the record player, except when my mother wanted to put on Cliff Richard or Guy Mitchell. So Two Little Orphans, I learned the song. And at a Christmas party in Renmore, because he was a soldier, I was stood up on a table to sing it. And it used to make me cry. I mean, it's really, have you heard it?
Yeah. Well, I listened to it.
I used to cry, and I don't know, it touched something in me that I didn't know that. I mean, at the age of six, how would you know? But it did. And I also remember everybody clapping and all the excitement, but there was a lot of Sidona there. Do you remember the big old Sidona bottles and cake and sweets and stuff? So it was a mixture of all that. But there was always music in the house, always. And when she asked, when whoever Alan asked me to remember songs, that was the first one that came to mind.
Is it a happy memory or...?
The happiest memories in my house are always around music.
Music.
So it's a really... Ivor Brown, I know you you had him on lots of times, he encouraged me to go back to the happy times. And as it came out, they were always around music. Even though they were miserable songs.
Yeah. And your dad was in the army, so was he at home or was he away a lot?
Oh, no, he was at home. He was desperately wanted to go. He wanted. I remember when all his friends were going to the Congo and to Cyprus and coming back with little blue hats. Remember the peacekeepers? Yeah. Daddy wanted to go away. But no, he stayed at home in Renmore Barracks. And the army featured big in our lives. We used to polish his brasso. We used to brasso his buttons on his uniform and shine up his leggings and do all that sort of stuff.
All right. Yeah. I'd say when you're a little girl, your dad's in the army.
He was absolutely stunningly gorgeous. Yeah. I have two really great pictures of him. I didn't get his looks, but I did get some of his whatever. he was really very, very handsome and in the uniform, yeah. He looked very gallant and stuff.
Okay, so here's Mary Coughlin's first choice, Bridie Gallagher, Two Little Orphans.
Sat by an old church door. The little girl's feet were as brown as the curls that fell on the dress that she wore. The boy's coat was faded and hatless his head. A tear shone in each little eye. Why don't you go home to your mama, I said, and this was a maiden's reply. Mama's in heaven, they took her away and left Jim and I all alone. We came here to stay till the close of the day, for we have no mama, no.
Bridie Gallagher, Two Little Orphans. So that's Mary Coughlin's first choice. Isn't that so evocative, like, for what was probably, like, you know, a pop song at the time?
But I know,
God almighty, it's...
And it was the one that I chose to sing. That's the first, my first singing engagement at the age of six.
But the buzz of the applause, you remember, yeah?
I remember. Yeah. I remember the whole thing of being the beautiful dress and standing up on the table. I remember my sister was with me, but I don't recall what she was doing, but we were both singing. But I just remember my, you know, my excitement and stuff and nervousness. Like, I'm nervous now just talking to you.
Yeah, weird. You still get nervous anything, yeah?
It's kind of an adrenaline thing, I suppose, is it?
Yeah, yeah. I suppose it's better to be than not to be.
Yes, it is.
So a musical house then, and then when do you start discovering your own music? What was the first record you bought?
The first record I bought, I think it was... oh yeah, it was. It was the soundtrack for Easy Rider, I think.
Oh yeah,
is that there? Did I say that?
No,
already?
No. You didn't. You didn't pick anything.
Pick anything. I picked. Well, okay. So my mother, we lived in Ash Road in Chantilla, and my granny lived beside us, and she had my mother's brothers lived there. There were two younger brothers. One of them was an Elvis fan, and one of them was a Beatles fan. But then one summer, Kenneth went to America, and he came back with all this stuff like. Chicago and Blood, Sweat and Tears. Yeah. Like, it was just like this, what is this, you know? I remember that he stood up all night outside Raftery's music store in Galway with an electrical shop, really, to get Sgt. Pepper's, you know?
Yeah.
So music was a huge part of my life, and I do remember that. I also remember he bought back Elton John. It was a pink cover, the one about the This Is Your Song was on it. And I remember going to the movies and seeing Easy Rider and absolutely loving all of the songs and going out and buying singles, you know. Mm. We had a shop called Poles, the Four Corners, but you would have to order a record and wait for it to come in. So, and we used to swap records on the street, and I have to say hello to Rita Ann Higgins for mentioning me last month. It was lovely.
She did. I think you made Rita Ann feel... okay, there's something going on here. I'm part of something. There are others like me out there when she saw you starting to emerge.
Yeah, I suppose it was the whole... because I was from Chantilla. Because I was just, you know, normal kind of, you know, hellraiser. That I did something, I suppose. It was a big deal to do it, to sing. You know, it was a big move for me. I mean, there was a lot of trad going on in Galway, and Dolores Cain was huge, and Jed Allen. And it was just a departure from that, I think, and it was something different, you know.
Yeah, so your second choice is a song people would associate with you, I'd Rather Go Blind, but you've chosen the 1969 version by Chicken Shack. Why this one?
Because I had a boyfriend at the time, Michael Connolly. He's passed away now, but I did get his permission to talk about him when I was doing my book. And... yeah, we got up to loads of development. We used to go
How old
were they?
Yeah.
Oh, 15.
Okay.
We used to go to churches and light all the candles and not pay for them and stuff like that. And one day we took a boat from the university and we rowed up the river, and we thought we might stay there forever. But we came back in the evening. Anyways, it was a relationship that ended very abruptly. His father didn't think I was suitable company for him, and vice versa. My father didn't think he was suitable company for me. So we didn't see each other for years. And the next time I saw him, believe it or not, was he was standing at the Mean Fiddler in front of the stage when I walked out. I nearly died. But at that stage, he was a doctor. Anyway, I found this song in the amusement arcade in Salt Hill, and it was by Chicken Shack. And it was called I'd Rather Go Blind. And every day I would go out there and play the record. Your man came over to me, John Kearney. He came over to me one day and he opened up the top of the you know, the jukebox.
Yeah.
And he said, "Now would you ever F off, Mary?" He said, "Please take it and go away. Listen to it at home." And I still have that 45 with the big hole in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Just to come over, and I used to have to get a little triangle to put down on the record player.
The fitting thing, yeah. Okay, so this was your mooning around as a teenager.
Oh, stop it. It moved me so much, yeah.
Okay, Chicken Shack, I'd Rather Go Blind. Mary Coughlin, second choice.
Thunder.
That's Chicken Shack, I'd Rather Go Blind. That's Mary Coughlan's second choice today. Now, your next choice is a Van Morrison song. And I think this brings you back to kind of hard times.
Yeah. I was 16. I was in fifth year at school, going into fifth year anyway, or whatever. We didn't have a TY year. I had a boyfriend again. I seem to have a lot of them, but actually only a few, but quite significant. He gave me a Van Morrison record at Christmas. One year he came down and tapped on the window, and in the sitting room, he knew I'd be there listening to records. And he just, because he wasn't allowed to come to the house anymore either. So he gave me the album in through the window. And I was listening to St. Dominic's Preview, and I listened to one track over and over and over again. I wrote about this in Woman Undone when I was doing that piece with the Broken Talkers. It just opened something. Listen to the lion inside of me. Listen to the lion. And I just started crying and shouting and roaring and, you know. I did something to myself that night. I ended up in the regional hospital in Galway. I remember my father put me into the car. And from there, I was transferred to Ballinasloe. They used to call it the Lunatic Asylum. It's the psychiatric unit. And I was there for a while. I tried to hurt myself. I know I didn't want to die, but I desperately wanted somebody to listen to me, because there was a lot of stuff going on in my life that I wanted to tell somebody and I couldn't. And I thought this might be a way. I didn't actually think, okay, I just went upstairs and, you know. And all of this came back to me listening to Millie's mother last week, and some work that I did with Francis Black. We did some work for suicide prevention, and I do a lot of stuff, you know. But you hear the stories and how parents are bereft. They don't know why. I don't think anyone knows why, you know, people do stuff. But I knew, I mean, I didn't do, I mean, I used to say I didn't do a very good job on it. I'm glad I didn't, obviously. But that's how miserable I was. That's how sad and how much pain I was in that I did that, you know.
And had you been holding it all in abeyance? Did the song unleash some kind of? Had you been holding
music
it from?
Music has always unleashed.
You holding it from yourself.
Holding it from myself. Holding it from myself. Holding it from everybody. When
this was the abuse.
Yeah, abuse. Yeah, yeah. And I met a girl I went to school with every single day. And she wrote to me when she read about Woman Undone. She came back from wherever she was living in Canada. And she said, she told me similar things about her. And we went to school together every single day. And we never spoke about such stuff to each other.
Shame?
Shame. Shame. Horrific shame. And not knowing. And feeling guilty about what happened. Even though I didn't know what I'd done wrong or what, you know, I still felt horrific shame. Which always came back to haunt me when I was drinking as well. It was the first place I'd go to. I would be ashamed of myself because of now drinking and I had a young family. And it keeps you there, you know. It keeps you locked into that whole cycle of shame and abuse and reoffending in whatever way, you know. I mean, I just...
So everything that... All your misadventures down the years, it all comes back to that trauma, does it? Yeah.
Yeah, I would say. You know, I can't blame everything on that, but it shaped the way I reacted rather than... I learned how to be responsible when I was in the Rutland Centre and to take responsibility for what I was doing now.
Okay.
You know, that the hurt that I was causing now to my kids, and they would bring them in and they would tell me how they felt. You know, they would bring them into the Rutland Centre every Tuesday and they would tell me, and I was forced to... I remember my son telling me how lonely he was when I was drunk, and I drove once when he was in the back of the car and he was so scared. So I remember them asking me the next day after that first family day, they called them, and he said, how do you feel? And I said, oh, I'm grand. And she literally just took me out. I heard your children yesterday. How could you tell me you're a grand? And that was my big wake-up moment 31 years ago, you know. Listening to the kids and no place to escape from from that pain anymore that they were now feeling, that I had... I promised I'd never hit them or I'd never let anyone hurt them or I'd never, you know, but I was the one who did it in the end, you know. But...
Brian
a long Darcy, time.
Mentioned his own abuse last week when he was talking about music here. But he just said a small little thing he said, and you know, it's very hard to live with. And he said something along the lines of, and it still is. And it was kind of devastating because you thought, okay, it's lifelong. Are you healed now? Do you ever become whole again?
No. I don't know. Okay, that's a big question. Every time I listen to, I was just reading a bit of a newspaper downstairs in the foyer, and some guy got a suspended sentence of 16 months for...
Okay, let's not get into...
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Every time something comes back in the news, on a newspaper or on television, every time I see it on the screen, a violent episode, every time I hear a news story, it just brings you right back. Because the way music does, it just brings me right back. And when I'm singing, I'd rather go blind or something, I go back to all of those times and all of that stuff comes out. And people know it. Not instinctive. I mean, they know it instinctively. They know that this is pain. And they kind of identify with it. And a lot of them cry still, you know. And I, you know, anyway.
There are probably people listening now who are in some place of hopelessness or despair or whatever. Do you have any advice for them?
Well, pick up the phone.
Pick up the phone.
Like we never did when we were kids. I got letters when I wrote my book from girls I knew and said, it's not just you. It wasn't just your house. You know, it was, you know. So talk to somebody, you know, talk to somebody. There must be somebody, you know, somewhere. If we had known at the time, we would have talked to each other and somehow maybe, you know, done something about it, but we were kind of powerless, you know.
Yeah,
that's all what that new song is about, being powerless, you know.
Okay, we'll come back to your new song, but first we listen to your third choice today, and this is the song that unleashed it all in you, Van Morrison. Listen to the Lion.
All my tears like water flow. Then all my tears like water flow. All my tears like water flow. For the lion.
That's Van Morrison, Listen to the Lion. That's Mary Coughlan's third choice. Now, your next choice is a Billie Holiday song. I think this brings you back to Running Away to London, does it?
Yeah, I went away to London and we were living in a squat in Ealing. Whole gang of us.
Posh.
Well, yeah. Very, very posh, yeah.
We're down in Kilburn or anything.
Number 30. They'll go back and put a plaque up to me. Somebody wrote to me from there a few years ago. They said it was being made into making way for a motorway. The whole street was being knocked down. Anyway, lived there and got up to various kind of devilments, you know, as you would in London when you're 18.
What was the scene you were in over there?
What was the scene? You mean like physically in the house?
I mean, generally, the people, the vibe,
all that.
There
was a couple of people there from Limerick. There was loads of guitars. There was a lot of long hair. There was a lot of people from Galway. There was loads of long dresses and skirts. And I remember going to see Elton John and Rod Stewart in Watford. I made a beautiful maxi skirt and embroidered it. And there was a lot of sitting around talking about, you know, Aldous Huxley and talking about other worlds in your mind and stuff. There was a lot of that stuff going on. if you get me drift. And
So
and I had a great job.
Your university kind of.
It was my university of life. Yeah, my university life. That's where I came from. And
your job?
My job. I was, first of all, I had various little jobs in a shoe shop and British student travel. I worked for their British student union. I mean, not travel. Temporary jobs, you know, the temp jobs. And then I got a job as a street sweeper in from Ealing Council. I was the first woman ever to sweep the streets of London. Now, there you go.
And remember, they used to warn people in school. If you don't pay attention, you end up sweeping the streets.
Well, I did. And we had I had a great summer. And all these women were just like bringing me in for cups of tea and biscuits and scones and even the odd beer of a hot day when you'd be pushing your trolley around, you know. Jesus, the times we had was just incredible, you know. So I went to see in Shepherd's Bush, I went to see this movie because I really love Diana Ross and Supremes. And I had actually never heard of Billie Holiday. I was 18. I'd never heard of her until that day. And I guess it was on Friday after work. And I went down Portobello Road the next day and out to the record stands, you know, and I got all the albums I could find of Billie Holiday and played them. And Good Morning Heartache, I recorded on my second album, Under the Influence. It had such an effect on me. I used to wash nappies singing Good Morning Heartache. Not that that was part of my heartache, but that's, you know, the everyday, her pain and suffering every day. And it, you can hear it all in her voice, you know. But yeah, and my neighbours remember me hanging out clothes. You know, nappies were a big thing for women in Galway. Yeah. You know, you'd hang out your nappies and see how clean they were, the kids' nappies. Nappy sand, the buckets of nappy sand. She said she used to remember it. Frieda Carney remembers me singing Good Morning Heartache and Somewhere Over the Rainbow while hanging out the nappies in the lawn. Which is kind of a strange image.
Okay, so here's Mary Coughlan's fourth choice, Billie Holiday, Good Morning Heartache.
Good morning, heartache, you old gloomy sight. Good morning, heartache, thought we said goodbye last night. Turned and tossed until it seemed you had gone. But here you are with the dawn. Wish I'd forget you, but you're here to stay. It seems I met you when my love went away. Stand by saying to you, good morning, heartache, what's new?
Billie Holiday, Good Morning Heartache. That's Mary Coughlan's fourth choice. I went down a rabbit hole of you singing Billie Holiday songs there during the week.
Oh, did you?
Looking at this, yeah. So the thing is, you said there her pain is in it. Is it a romantic notion that the rest of us have that, like, a great blues singer they have to be singing their own pain, do they?
Well, you hear that asked a lot in interviews, and there was, I mean,
oh, well, I'm sorry. I hate to be obvious.
Jesus, no, but I think it is.
Yeah.
Because if you read about a lot of the people, and almost everyone has something, but mine was a pint glass of vodka. I used to fill it up with Ribena and take it to bed every night, you know. And there it was in the morning, half gone, you know. I was never sober for so many years. I would drink, wake up in the middle of the night and drink half the glass and drink the rest of it in the morning, you know. That was my good morning heartache.
So you kept yourself at bay all the time, yeah? Never let sobriety in at all, like, for...
No.
That's hardcore, isn't it?
It's pretty hardcore. Yeah, I was drinking 2-3 litres of vodka a day for quite a while, you know. I ended up in hospital, you know, with really bad liver and stuff, you know. On machines and stuff. But yeah, that was my... That stuff never went away, but I never got help until I stopped drinking, you know. I never, ever talked about it, ever, to anybody. you know, maudlin when I would be drunk and say something to somebody about something, but never really got into it or why I was that way. Sure, I didn't know, you know. Seems like stupid now, but 30, you know, it was, yeah.
I actually look if you knew then what you know now and all that kind of thing.
All that stuff, yeah.
Do you kind of beat yourself up about I could have no. done all that earlier, gone through all that a bit faster? And
it's the one thing that keeps you there is if you just, I mean, of course I remember it and it's always there, you know, but I don't beat myself over it anymore.
Yeah, so you got there eventually anyway.
Got like, there eventually and, so many don't. You know, as they say, a life beyond my wildest dreams now.
Yeah.
For longer than it was awful, really, you know.
Okay, yeah, you know? Yeah. And up in Kilmacanog in Wicklow now.
Yeah.
What's the shape of the household these days?
Myself and John, my partner from New Zealand, 20 years.
So is John here all the time now?
Nah, he goes kind of
right.
Go in.
Okay.
He goes down because he owns a lighting, a concert lighting thing. That's how I met him. He was doing lights for my gigs down there. But he goes down there in December after Christmas. And then I generally go down in March and do a load of gigs, you know.
Perfect. Yeah.
Perfect. And then he comes
women
back.
Women all over the country going, I like her style. That's an arrangement.
My daughter Claire and her husband Kieran are there. The three kids, dogs, cats, chickens, bees, a lot of bees. We have a lot of beehives and they're all doing the bees this morning while I'm in here. So a woman's hive is very healthy. My next brand. A woman's hive. And what else do we do? When I'm at home, I'm very at home. I don't even like to go out. But I mean, I've just come back from London. I've been recording. And I did 38 gigs in Australia last year in New Zealand over a 2-month period. And a week later, I went to Holland for a tour. And I came back from there. And about 2 weeks later, I did 16 gigs in the UK. So things are fairly lively in that regard. And then when I'm at home, I just like to catch up on, dare I say, telly. I sprawl on the, I have one of those sofas that goes out like this. You press a button and I just sit there and I read loads of books and I do nothing really.
I always think of a great thing Robbie Williams said once in an interview. You know, he had his years on the road as well and the wildness. And someone said to him kind of disbelievingly, so do you not go out anymore? And he said, I've been out.
I've been out. I know.
You have a new single, More Like Bridget. I might play it in a while. It's inspired by St. Bridget, but it's very bold, I think. I put it politely, I'd say it swings a bit like.
It swings. It's bloody great. I you know, Bridges, it's huge now.
Yeah.
But like, I was working with Pete Lannister and the producer in England, and I wrote a beautiful song about Galway. I'm really, really, really proud of it. I love it so much. You don't say things like that, really. I don't know about songs that I've written. And I sent him the words, and he said, "What's Skullbreeja? What is that?" And I said, "Oh, well, it was my national school, and it's named after St. Bridget, you know." And he said, "Who's Bridget, you know?" So we started talking about Bridget, and I talked about Bridget now and pagan Bridget and the way the Catholic Church kind of assimilated her into their stuff, you know. But she was around before that. And then I started to talk about her. I've been invited to a few, you know, the Bridget festival things, and he heard me talking about the miracles that she performed and how she was very bold, really, and she wasn't liked by the Catholic Church or by the church. When it came, it wasn't really called the Catholic Church then, was it? I'm not sure, it was just Christian.
Roman.
Yeah, early Christian. Roman, yeah. And so I started putting all that stuff together and there it is, you know.
It's pagan Bridget, it's very pagan much in Bridget. That song, if you ask me, right? Your last choice is a Frank Sinatra track and another one that you've recorded, but you didn't record it over enthusiastically, I'm getting.
My ex-husband Frank was on the phone there. He said, you better bring in Frank Sinatra. I didn't. There's a long story, but you probably don't want to go into it, do you? No.
I could give you a minute on it.
I had been asked by Warner Brothers to get rid of my good friend, my arranger, my mentor, Eric Visser, in favour of a new producer. And I didn't want to do that. And they said, OK, well, you can walk, you know. But at stake was this huge recording deal, which meant I could have bought a house for the first time in my life. amongst other things. And I had a manager at the time. He says, go for a walk, go for a coffee, sit down, we'll sort this out. And it was all because I wanted to do two songs that they didn't want me to do. And in the end, I did the two songs. I rang Eric and he said, look, this stuff happens all the time. I've been with Polydor and EMI and stuff, you know. These things happen, just do it. And then they dropped me after that. And I went back to Eric. So there you go. But in the meantime, I sang this song one day, really drunk, I might add, in the studio. I'd get along without you very well. So.
Okay.
And I did.
Mary Coughlan, thank you so much. Mary is celebrating 40 years in the music business with gigs all over the country, including Theatre Royal in Waterford in August, Wexford in October, Limerick in November, Dublin's Three Olympia Theatre in December. And you'll find more details of all that on marycoughlan.ie. And by the way, if you've been infected by any of the issues Mary was discussing, you can find help at rte.ie/helplines. But look, we'll play out now with your final choice. So Frank Sinatra, I Get Along Without You Very Well. Mary Coughlan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brendan.
But I get along without you very well. I've forgotten you just like I should. Of course I have. Except to hear your name or someone's laugh that is the same. But I've forgotten you just like I should. What a guy, what a fool am I to think my breaking heart could kid the moon.
Email Brendan at rte.ie.